Okay, it's great to be back with you with another GoldSeek.com Radio Gold Nugget segment. Today's special guest, Harry S. Dent Jr. Well, it's a pleasure to welcome back to the show economist Harry S. Dent Jr., head at H.S. Dent Economic Research, the forecasting think tank, and author of The Demographic Cliff, already number one bestseller in its class at Amazon.com. Welcome, Harry S. Dent Jr.
Nice to be back, Chris.
Let's begin today with the demographic cliff, how to survive and prosper during the Great Deflation of 2014 through 2019. Now, before we delve into the topic of the demographic cliff, where your work shows that there is accelerating retirement of the baby boomers, threatening economic stability, I'd like to put that topic in abeyance for a moment and turn to your foundational demographic work of how this has worked in the past and adding significance to how it could be working for us today. I wonder if you could recapitulate how the baby boom generation was responsible for the roaring economic boom in the 1990s, and how that fundamental demographic trend is shifting and is much more precarious.
Yeah, you know, Chris, I mean, I was a consultant, first at Bain & Company to large companies, and then to new ventures and smaller companies in the 1980s. And you know, I was discovering that all these growing companies were appealing to young new baby boomers. So I got into demographic research, and I discovered by 1988 the greatest cycle I've ever discovered, and it was the spending wave, that new generations enter the workforce around age 20, earn and spend more money, get married, have kids, buy houses, cars, all this stuff, borrow money, and that cycle peaks at age 46, and then it declines sharply after age 53. So I came up with this simple indicator. You just move the birth index forward for 46 years, the peak in spending in the average family. And that's what told me in the late 1980s and early 1990s that the U.S. was going to see its greatest boom and stock bubble in history in the 1990s. And at the same time, Japan was going to have a great fall. And in late 88, 89, we predicted both those things with this one simple indicator. And the good part of it is I can go to any country in the world. And guess which country, after Japan was the first to collapse back in the early 1990s, which we predicted, guess which country has the worst demographics in the next several years? Germany. China kind of plateaus and slows, which is very unusual for an emerging country. All emerging countries have stellar demographics for decades and decades in some cases. China is starting to slow, and nobody gets this, but Germany has the fastest fall off in demographic spending trends as people age of any country other than Japan, and actually its drop in the next decade is steeper than Japan's was in the 1990s. So everybody's expecting Germany to hold up Europe, and I'm like, hey, they are thrifty. Hey, they didn't have a big bubble in real estate and everything else. They are hardworking. They do export a lot, but their demographics are horrible.
Before we move on, I do have a question for you, because I know there's going to be a lot of sharp listeners in this audience. How do you factor in the possibility that this indicator that you developed, this demographic indicator, which is quite impressive, do you at all worry that it could be coincidental? In other words, that, you know, maybe the Fed was also pumping an excessive amount of monetary stimulus over that 1990s period?
Yeah, you know, I mean, Chris, I've studied bubbles and cycles in everything back hundreds of years, any data, anything. And what you always see is there's fundamental trends. It used to be more commodity cycles and innovation that drove the economy on 29 to 30 year cycles. The Kondratieff wave used to be the dominant cycle. And then it became generation cycles as we developed the first middle class families in from the roaring 20s forward. So that changed thing, and it changed which cycles are important. But it doesn't matter what the cycle is. If there's a fundamental driving it up, then people will speculate again. The people will get complacent. You know, governments will try to fuel the boom, you know, and you create bubbles out of it. I think I understand the fundamentals better than anybody and how they've changed the last century. But any time you get a boom like in the early 1900s or in the 50s and 60s, or especially in this last boom with and governments pushing down interest rates. But you have to remember, we didn't have QE until after the last crash. It was just governments would lower interest rates and allow more speculation and easier lending every time we had a crash. But they didn't come in and inject trillions of dollars.
I mean, I guess you could argue that in the 90s, Japan did to a lesser extent, but not to this degree. Are we victims of our own affluence? And what I mean is, if you look at this amazing increase, the economic boom, and not just economic, but demographic shifts that occurred arguably just over a century ago as petroleum became so widely used in our economy. I mean, as you know, Michael Rupert is so fond of saying, each one calorie we consume requires 10 calories worth of petro energy. That's got to factor into demographics dramatically as we now come down the right side of Hubbard's peak. How do you suspect that this decline in petroleum output will impact the demographics and then impact the economies?
Well, you know, they all work together in a cycle of innovation and challenges and booms and everything. And you got to remember, before oil came around, you know, coal and wood were the dominant sources. They were way more polluting, more expensive. Oil was cheaper and cleaner when it came along. Now oil's gotten expensive and obviously not clean. All I see is that you have one cycle of innovation after the next. When something fails, when something gets too expensive, or like when we had inflation in the 1970s, we got personal computers and wireless phones and all this stuff that is, you know, helped to create lower inflation and new opportunities. So that's the way the free market system works. It booms, it goes to excesses, we see extreme inflation, and then when that goes down, we see extreme deflation. And, you know, I mean, we see innovation, creative destruction, boom, bust, inflation, deflation throughout history. It's like male and female. You can't live with them, can't live without them. You know, that's what makes the system work. You don't create energy in a battery without positive and negative poles. And politics doesn't work without Republicans and Democrats, whichever side you're on. So that's the way I see the world. Yes, we have limitations today, and I think there's going to be major breakthroughs in energy, alternative energies, in the next decade, and it's not likely to be solar. I got a little place in Puerto Rico in the middle of nowhere on an island on top of a hill. Solar's my solution there. But am I going to use solar? Here, it's not as cheap, it's not competitive, and neither is wind in most cases. So I think there's a bigger breakthrough, and you know what? I think, Chris, I'm predicting oil prices are going to go to $20 to $30 a barrel in the next decade and probably $30 to $45 in the next 2 to 3 years. I think oil prices dropping are going to change the game and force something radically more cheap and more clean than the present alternative energies. But, you know, that's just the type of stuff that happens.
You also note that inflation rises when large numbers of young folks enter the workforce. The opposite, deflation when large numbers of seniors downsize their homes, they cut back their spending. So with the baby boom retirement scenario approaching, that would lead, obviously, to massive deflation over the next 5 years. Tell us more, please.
Well, you know, first of all, I tell people, look, why are we debating all these issues, inflation, deflation, demographic? Japan's already gone through this. Japan peaked between late 89 and 96 on our demographic cycles. I was the only person in the entire world, I think, that predicted Japan was going to burst in the 90s, and they did, and they've done QE now since 1997, you know, for a decade and a half or more, and all they've got is a coma economy. You know, stimulus doesn't work when fundamental trends are pointing down in demographics and debt loads are too high and Japan's just increasing their debt. So I look at, you know, let's look at Japan and learn from them. Their real estate bubble peaked right on the demographic top for spending in real estate in 1991 for Japan, way ahead of ours in 2000, you know, in 5 and 6. And it's gone down 60% and has never bounced very much and is still near its bottom. One of the things happening now, Chris, is real estate lasts forever. And that means that when people die, they're sellers of the real estate. Young people buy all the real estate between age 27 and 41. That's a demographic fact. So when you have more dyers or increasing dyers versus buyers, there's less and less need for new real estate and less upward price pressure. I don't think real estate's going to ever be the same again. So, you know, we just look at a lot of things and demographics would tell you, like Japan, Japan has been struggling with deflation. They've been stimulating constantly, and they still have had a zero inflation rate in the last two decades. Now the U.S. and Europe are stimulating feverishly, and you would have thought this would have caused, I mean, any other period in time, especially the 1970s with inflationary, you would have thought we would have hyperinflation out of this. We have inflation fell in the last year. That's why gold dropped. I actually thought gold was going to go up to 2,000 before it peaked, but gold dropped because despite escalating stimulus, we still have falling inflation. The stimulus is not going into consumer prices. It's going into financial asset bubbles, and that's what's going to kill the Fed. They keep stimulating the economy to keep the bubble going, and it creates bigger bubbles that burst again, and then the economy goes down despite their best efforts.
Speaking of bubbles, some folks are calling the stock market a bubble, and you say, well, stay clear for a year or two, expect as low as, 5,800 on the Dow. But, you know, there's going to be a lot of folks in the audience again who are going to say, look, 2013, we saw the S&P hit a 32% total return. How does improving corporate earnings expected throughout 2014, how does that factor into your analysis?
Okay, first of all, earnings have been decelerating over the last year or so, and they're going to decelerate even more. I mean, they've gone up dramatically. For the first, I mean, stocks were following earnings for most of this rebound, but a lot of that rebound, 40% of it by calculations, were just from stock buybacks, companies using super low interest rates from the Fed, short and long term, to buy back their own stock and reduce the float of their stock, so the earnings per share goes up, and that's what drives the stock. Interest rates have been pushed down artificially by the Fed, and that has increased corporate profits. My estimate is that 60 to 70% of these earning gains have been totally artificial from government stimulus and pushing long and short-term interest rates down. And what the government's saying is, we don't trust the free market system. We think we know better. We're going to decide when the economy goes up and down. We're not going to let this debt bubble deleverage. There's nothing better after you have a debt bubble or a financial asset bubble to let it deleverage and deflate and make the cost of living and investing affordable again. So governments are, and I just think governments have worn out their welcome here. They've shot most of their bullets. We've gotten a 5-year increase in stocks, longer than I would have thought, but stocks are now extremely overvalued. They're hitting new highs. Every time we've seen a bubble hit new highs, guess what's happened next, Chris? They've crashed to new lows. That's been the trend since 1995. Bubble up, crash, bubble higher, crash lower, and now bubble higher, crash lower. That's my forecast, that the Dow's going to peak somewhere around 17,000 early this year, and then it's going to crash to 5 to 6,000 by 2015 or 16, and ultimately will bottom as low as 3 to 4,000 before our long-term cycles turn up again in demographics, geopolitical, commodities. I mean, we measure everything. I've studied comprehensively everything you can study in economics. My chore has been, how do I decide what cycles are important, and how do I not just identify a cycle because it repeats, but identify what drives it so I can project it?
But, you know, when you start throwing numbers out there, you're talking nearly Great Depression-style collapse there.
I've been saying this for 20 years. I said back in my first book in 1989, we'd have a Great Depression between 2008 and 2020-23, when the largest, imagine this, the largest generation in history, the baby boom, and around the world, it's not just the U.S., peaks in its spending and starts to save for retirement and then retire. Old people and dead people don't drive economies. I mean, it's just that simple. And we've never seen, and that's the point of this new book, The Demographic Cliff, is that we've never, it's not just that the baby boom generation is peaking in more and more countries around the world and turning down. It's the fact that almost every developed country has a smaller echo boom following it than the baby boom. We've never seen a smaller generation follow a larger generation, unless you go back to the Black Plague or something like that. I mean, this is something the world has not calculated in. Yeah, we know there's going to be more retirees per worker. That's the only thing that economics gets about this. They don't understand that it impacts real estate, it impacts stock prices, economic growth, population growth, workforce growth for decades to come. And we're lucky in the U.S. We've had a lot of immigration, and I'm going to Australia in February to speak. They're the luckiest country in the world. They got more immigration than anybody. They're one of the few countries I see that actually could have positive economic growth from demographics for decades to come. U.S. goes sideways, but most of Europe, East Europe, Russia, East Asia, including China, go down. They're going to lose pop. How can you grow your economy when your population and workforce are declining?
Certainly agree with you. I was reading the IMF's numbers report that is on Australia. They were forecasting huge numbers a year ago, and they were spot on for Australia. And of course, Canada, they also like Canada. I don't know if you see strong immigration into Toronto, Montreal, and Quebec, and a few of their top cities there. As it ties in with your demographic thesis, the scenario you're outlining sounds so much like something we would hear from Gerald Celente, a good friend of the show, who tends to have a more negative outlook on our economy and political system. He would say, and so many of my other guests, that we see cracks in the foundation here, that we're not going to go back to the status quo as we always did following every recession from, let's say, 1930 all the way through, let's say, 2006 or so, that now we're entering a whole new world. Maybe you can kind of bring it together there and explain just what that world's going to look like going forward.
Yes, you know, I would agree with that. I mean, we have had, actually, if you go back to the late 1700s, when I call Harry met Sally, democracy and free market capitalism joined together for the first time in history, we have had a bubble boom in stocks and economy and global growth ever since then. But even in that boom, I'm writing a report today for my company, we had two major resets, you know, the 1835 to 43 depression and then the 1930s depression. Those were two major resets. Anytime you boom and bubble, people are going to overborrow, as I said earlier, and overspeculate, and you're going to go to extremes. But that's part of the process. It helps innovation that new technology companies like in the 90s could raise money easily and try a million things. So it's just part of the process. But those bubble booms are always followed by great resets. And deflation has to take the debt and leverage out of the economy. It has to take financial asset prices from extremes. Everything's overpriced. Condos in Manhattan, art, antique cars, stocks, commodities, everything's overpriced and needs to come back down to reality, especially housing for the next generation to be able to afford the American dream again. So we're, to me, this is not another recession like you just said, or just another slowdown. This is a major reset that happens once in a lifetime or once in a century in many cases. And I think it is going to be, I almost get a little conservative and don't say how bad I think it could be. I don't think it's quite as bad as Celente, but I do see civil unrest, and I see China the worst place to be in the next decade. I don't want to talk about China. It's so bad, such a bubble. But the U.S. is a difficult place. Again, I'm going to Australia next month in February and giving a series of presentations. I am almost ready to move to Australia. Civil society, best demographics in the developed world, high immigration from Asia, educated people. But they've got overvalued real estate, and oh, do they sell a lot of stuff to China.
There must be alternatives then to stocks and some of these other investment classes that you deem overvalued. And of course, that leads to the greenback, the U.S. dollar. What other alternatives come to mind? Where would you be shifting folks' investment portfolios?
Yeah, I mean, I have three things, and you can vary these with your risk profile. One is the safest people should just be in cash, just be in short-term CDs and T-bills, and like you say, just in cash, and let this next bubble work its way out in the next few years like the last two bubbles have, and then reinvest when it gets to levels that we deem are more affordable. And again, 5 to 6,000 Dow would get me investing again in a few years from now. The second level is the U.S. dollar and you, and it's not holding greenbacks. You got to invest in a bull dollar fund or UUP, an ETF that measures the U.S. dollar against other currencies. Yes, we're printing too much money, but Japan's printing more than we are, and Europe did before this and stuff. So it's a relative thing. The U.S. dollar was the safe haven in the last crash, especially in the second half of 2008. Everything went down. U.S. dollar went up. So the U.S. dollar index, however you invest, can offset that. And if you're more aggressive, I mean, the best investors have always understood this. Every bubble or stocks or anything, they go down faster than they go up. It takes most bubbles 5 to 6 years to build to extremes, and then 1.5 to 3 years to crash. So stocks go down faster than they go up. So you can also short stocks to some degree of your portfolio. Again, depending on your risk profile. If you're 65 and don't want to take any risk, just sit in cash, eat a little bit out of your portfolio to survive the next years out of your cash, and then reinvest when stocks are 60-70% lower and real estate's 30-40% lower, and on and on and on. And that's the way I look at it. There's three sectors, but there aren't many sectors, because as we saw in 2008, Chris, when the bubble finally burst, almost everything went down. Even gold went down. I was surprised at that. Even gold and silver went down in the second half of 2008 because we had deflation instead of inflation. The world doesn't understand deflation because we haven't seen it since the early 1930s, and none of us were around back then.
Yeah, I would add that gold was really remarkably resilient during that. When I look back over the charts, I'm astounded at how it snapped back so quickly and never really even broke its trend. However, bonds, you know, particularly corporate bonds, they were just decimated in bond funds. You know, in retrospect, it looked as though it was the end of the economic world. But if I do recall, municipal debt held up remarkably well.
Well, you know, to me, I mean, and municipal debt has changed a lot. What I tell people, if you are going to invest in municipal debt, you want wastewater, water plants, and things that don't vary with the economy. Nobody stops flushing their toilets in a downturn. But even toll roads and things like that, people may reduce. But if you're investing, you want revenue bonds that are tied to a secure cash flow stream, like, again, water and wastewater are my two favorite things in the muni world, especially if interest rates go up and keep going up, which I think they will this year at first before they fall again with deflation. I would want to lock in high quality treasury bonds and things like that, and these revenue bonds with municipalities. People have retired and entered the workforce at very steady rates for the last couple of decades, the baby boom. But, Chris, you're right, that's going to change. Older people are going to stay in the workforce longer, as already is happening in Japan, and younger people are going to have a harder time entering and live with their parents and all this sort of stuff. So that's part of it. Demographics is a broad cycle. Every 40 years, boom and bust. I have many other cycles, and I have a new boom-bust cycle that occurs about every 10 years, roughly. And that cycle is the biggest trigger for downturns and crashes, and that cycle points down from 2014 to 19. So I was premature in predicting a downturn because I didn't think governments would stimulate this much. But this new cycle tells me the real risk period is 2014 and 15 and even into late 2019. So again, I'm a cycle guy. And every time I make a mistake, I discover a new cycle. That's my learning process.
And would you say then that it would be wise to use the cycles, these demographic trends, and then also obey the price trend, meaning that once we see that break in, let's say, the Dow or the S&P or the NASDAQ, we start to see the weekly trend really break down in price, use that as more of your timing indicator. Is that also reasonable?
Yeah, well, I mean, we have windows where we think this downturn will happen. So yes, I'm looking for, I actually have two scenarios right now. One is that this little correction we're having here deepens into late January, and then we see one more run up, because my technical indicators, which are even more short term, don't suggest we're nearing a top, but we're not quite there yet. But if the market does keep melting up as it has since most of 2013, then I think we could peak as early as late January. So I mean, you know, the short term and the long term are opposites to me. Long term trends like demographics and technology cycles and commodity cycles are so predictable. It's like, you know, unbelievable, and people just don't look at that and see it. But shorter term cycles depend a lot on politics and all types of events, and they're much harder to predict. It's, I can tell you this bubble's going to burst, but I can only say here's a range of time I could see that it could peak. It's much more difficult to call short-term trends than long-term.
Very good. Well, listen, we want everybody to pick up a copy of your latest book. So please tell folks where you'd recommend that they find a copy of The Demographic Cliff, How to Survive and Prosper During the Great Deflation of 2014 through 2019, please.
You know, I always recommend, I went to get David Stockman's book, which is one of the greatest books I've read in a while. I couldn't even find it at Barnes & Noble, and it's selling well. You know, you don't know what bookstore's going to sell. What. I just go to Amazon. They get it to you in a couple days. It's usually free shipping. Amazon's great. And we also have a free newsletter at harrydent.com. I mean, it's a daily newsletter. It keeps people up with our thinking and what we think about current events and any, you know, new long-term research. I mean, it's just, you can't go wrong with that as well. But this book, I tell you, Chris, I've written many books. The Great Boom Ahead was my greatest book, but this is my next greatest book after all the books I've written.
Very insightful and must-read information. I want everybody to direct your web browsers to Harry's webpage that he's outlined there and pick up a copy of this book. We'll look forward to having you back on the show, sir.